Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you were Portuguese, how would you feel about that result?
I would feel forra, but also I would feel slightly gutted.
Yeah.
It's both an incredible result and could have been so much more.
It's a weird one, isn't it? It's a very interesting one. So I think we're going to try and dig into three of the games.
Yes.
Argentina v Samoa at Friday night, which we were at. We were there. We were in Saint Etienne for that. Lovely
yep.
stadium. Great game. Georgia versus Portugal, which was a hell of a game, which we watched in a bar in Lyon, which had...
On our own.
Yeah, there were like three children in there otherwise.
Who were working there, by
yeah.
the way.
Very odd atmosphere, very odd little place. And then England v Chile, which, you know, was an occasion.
Do you want to start on England-Chile, get out of the way, or...
We can do, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like there's only so much you can say about that game. I think Pablo Lemoyne kind of
yes.
said it all at the end where he said, look, we were obviously beaten by a much better team. We deserved to get that score put on us in the sense that, you know, we learned something about the level that we need to be playing at when we're playing at the Rugby World Cup. If we want to improve, we need to play against these teams and improve.
He said it in much stronger terms
but,
than that.
Yes, but, like those were the only things he said in favour of what happened in the game.
Mm.
But... he lashed out pretty extensively at World Rugby
yes.
for the fact that they've had no Tier 1 exposure or even anything resembling it. Nothing that could possibly get them ready for a Tier 1 test match other than one game against Scotland A.
Yeah.
And that was all that they've possibly had. And that was Scotland's decision to play that test as well.
Yeah, Scotland were looking to stop over either Uruguay or Chile.
Yeah.
That was Scottish Rugby Union led and they outbid Uruguay for the game.
Yeah. And made it extremely clear saying that we're the circus act, but what is it? But World Rugby are the owners
yeah,
of the circus.
We are the clowns. But on the other side, you have the owners of the circus.
Yes.
And
extremely well put.
Yes. Everyone's there to laugh at Chile. They're a joke. But actually, really, it's not down to them.
Yeah.
And I think, as you say, I don't have much to say about the game itself. Henry Arundel did incredibly well to stand on the wing and take a few tries.
Yeah.
Some extremely, extremely good goal hanging and took his fourth try very well.
It's great that when somebody in a post-match interview says, oh, you know what, it's just down to the people around me making them and then, you know, I just need to finish them. It's just my job standing on the wing and putting the ball down. Like, he was actually bang on this occasion. You usually go like, oh, you're just being humble, mate. So, you know what, you're spot on, Henry Arundel.
Never has someone scored five tries and less felt like man of the match.
Yeah.
He basically got involved six times and five of them were tries.
Yeah.
And that is the most important thing in the game, you know, scoring points. Grand, don't want to take that away from him. Don't want to downgrade
Absolutely.
His performance
for
at all.
For wingers to finish.
Yeah, exactly. He did his job as a winger. But
he owes
like,
Marcus Smith a pint.
He owes everyone else on that team about 10 pints each.
Yeah.
And look, at times it looked like England are playing 10 pints deep, but they put a lot of it together after 22 minutes of Chile being so up for it and so on it. And you've seen some people, some more absolute shit takes on, oh, Rugby World Cup needs less blowouts, needs less of this. A, you had the English football team scoring 7 goals against Panama in the last Football World Cup, right?
Yeah.
And no one's calling for that shrink. In fact, that's growing to 48 teams, 46 teams,
okay.
something like
that's
that. Next time out, 40-odd teams anyway, from the 32 teams it's been. The Rugby World Cup needs this, as Lemoyne says, right? This is the first time any of these players in his team have been remotely exposed to top flight test match rugby against this level. Right. They haven't played anything like this before. They've got to do it again next week against Argentina, and they will be better for having played England first.
Yes.
They'll be a better team for having gone through this experience. It was a really, really ugly scoreline. It was an ugly last 52 minutes. There were 22 minutes where they were so in the game and so on top of them and frustrated England so much, and they looked so weirdly anxious and just like thrown off by the fact that Chile were doing that, which was fantastic, and I loved because I love this Chile team.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there was a problem, as you say, in that they'd never had a chance to acclimatise to this level.
Yes.
Right? You look at their warm-up games, you look at the games they played over this year to lead in. They played Namibia, who are level with Romania's the worst side in this tournament.
Yeah.
They'd played Uruguay, which was, you know, good test, and they played Argentina A, which, you know, again, solid preparation, but the closest they've come to playing a level like this is they played Argentina and Scotland's second teams.
Yeah.
Right? They've played players that weren't making the team for those, but are, you know, top-end professionals.
Sure.
So that can get you up to a certain standard. And I think we saw that against Japan. They were used to playing at that standard. They had a little bit of exposure.
They could acclimatise to that standard, yeah. You know. That people are correct that we need to see less blowouts in Rugby World Cups. But the way that you do that isn't by excluding people and making sure we only watch the same 10 fixtures of rugby union over and over again until we get bored.
This was the 20th team England have ever played in a full test match.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is absurd for a supposedly global game.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's ridiculous that England have, up until yesterday, they'd only played 19 different teams.
If you look at kind of like the complete kind of opposite kind of flip side of that, remember kind of over COVID when the England women's team could basically only play France.
Yes.
Because that was the only team who would genuinely test them.
Yeah.
It was the only team because they would just walk over anybody else.
And also, that's the only team that's investing properly in the women's program at the time.
Exactly, exactly. And don't get me wrong, they were all great tests, but there was a part of you at the back of your head went, oh, we're going to watch England play France again.
No, there wasn't, like, because I love that.
No, but it's a great fixture, but you know what I mean, though? Yeah. It's like you're watching the same fixture over and over again. Mm. And if you want to just decrease the World Cup, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you're not going to watch teams like Chile. The best thing about the Rugby World Cup is that sometimes you get things like this happen.
Yeah.
Where Chile come in, where Portugal, who we'll get onto, come in. And the fact that, look, obviously Chile got battered in the end. England were so far comprehensively the better team, which doesn't come as a surprise considering, you know, the league that all of those players play in compared to the league that all of the Chileans play in. But they could genuinely take something out of the 20 minutes where they were competitive, you know?
Yeah.
Rodrigo Fernandez's all-time favourite player is Owen Farrell. And he played against him there. And he had 20 minutes where he was level with him. Where Chile made more line breaks than the team with Farrell on. Where Fernandez had thrown more offloads than Farrell. And look, rugby isn't won in 20 minutes. It's won in 80 minutes.
Yeah.
But that is the tiny stepping stone, the tiny building block that Chile can use from that. They'll be better in their game against Argentina that's coming up for having played against England than they would have without, you know,
exactly,
having that exposure to tier one opposition. But they need that, not weekly, but they need that at least on an annual basis,
yeah,
an opportunity to do that and to play at that standard. And it wasn't Chile's entire first team, but it was a load of players who will have learned something from that experience.
So the thing is, right, you look at Portugal as a counterpoint because they're in a very similar situation to Chile. They've both got really young, really expressive teams who love to play dynamic attacking rugby, who really love to express themselves, all of which are broadly, other than a few standout players who are older, in the kind of 22 to 25 age range.
Sure.
You know, they're all a pretty young team. We've come through and come through together, and now they've pushed on, they've kicked on, and they've qualified for a World Cup. Now the shirts are kind of theirs, and they've got huge futures in terms of what they can do beyond this and what they can build if they start to have further generations come through and have the advantages they had from the age of about 18 younger and, you know, start having proper academy pathways and so on in place. Like we're seeing with, like, say, Uruguay being able to bring through players like Manuel Adao and so on, which wouldn't have been possible before, you know, before he would have been getting to the standard he's at now at a later age. Like, that's just allowing these players to flourish and be the best version of themselves. Errata, again, wouldn't have been possible a few generations ago.
Yeah.
What we're seeing with Portugal, however, is that they are, on an annual basis, playing Georgia, who are regularly playing the big Tier 1 teams now, semi-regularly. Not regularly enough, but they are the one Tier 2 team, other than the Pacific Islands, who are getting regular exposure to this level.
Yeah.
And so by seeing that, by playing them, Portugal may be able to raise their level because they're used to be able to play at a comparative standard, right? Romania were very close to beating Argentina a couple of years ago. They gave Italy a proper game. Portugal themselves also got a game against Italy last year. So we have seen them start to get this game time. You then had the joint training session they had with Ireland earlier this year. And you had a couple of the Portuguese players saying a very similar thing to Fernandes after that game against Scotland A about, this is the quickest I've ever seen anyone play rugby.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't get used to the speed of it.
With Chile more than any other team in this World Cup, the speed that they play at is notably different.
Yeah.
You know, notably lower than everybody else's. And we praised them for the fact that they were realistic in that in the Japan game and the Samoa game. But obviously, in England, it lasted 20 minutes and then after that, it was a very different story.
It's what Lemoyne said about the standard of this team is the soft belly of the pro data.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these are players who are very good pro data standard players.
Yeah.
Who have never been up to the top 14 level.
Yeah.
There's not a player in their team who has played top flight professional rugby, which makes their achievements all the more remarkable because there isn't a side in the World Cup that has as few players that have been exposed to the top level as them.
Yeah.
And it's incredible what they've achieved. But also it means that now they are being exposed to that. They're not doing that until they're three rounds in, three games into a World Cup where fatigue starting to have set in. This wasn't Chile's strongest team. You can, you know, talk about England, you can go, well, brilliant, they beat the team that's in front of them. That team should always have beaten them.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
If they were Barbar's team that never met before, they should be putting a similar scoreline on them. Just because they're players who have been full-time professionals, a lot of them since they were 15, 16, you know, essentially in that ballpark
of professionalism. They play at a higher standard than Chile do every single week in the Premiership.
Yeah.
It's like a considerably higher standard than Chile do at international level.
And so, look, it's an ugly scoreline, but I think ultimately it's one that will benefit Chile, and it's one that World Rugby needs to take the correct lessons from.
Yes.
And a lot of people will be very reactionary and say, oh, we need to kick these teams out of the World Cup, it's making for an uglier viewing. What they need to be doing is going, well,
it's
we need,
yes.
Yeah, giving these games to other nations,
yeah.
Right? And a lot of people throw up the argument that, well, fans don't go and pay for games against these smaller teams, you know. Twickenham didn't sell out for that Fiji game very recently. Part of that was because England were playing shite. But you've also got, you know, so Cardiff puts the prices down for the Tier 2 games when they play Georgia, when they play Samoa or Canada or Fiji in recent years. They sell the tickets for cheaper prices than they would for a lot of the other nations.
Yeah.
That's grand. That allows a different crowd to get to the rugby. It helps you grow your fan base.
It was where we first went to the rugby.
Exactly.
Was it that game?
Yeah. If it wasn't for those games, who knows, you know, we probably wouldn't have been to a rugby match at an early age.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have been a far more, I think, exclusive thing, and it was a, you know, amazing thing, particularly in a nation like Wales, where rugby is a working class game. It allows working class families to bring the whole family to a game.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a great initiative. The other side of it is go to those nations, right? This whole Chilean revolution was largely started because they managed to arrange a fixture against the Maori All Blacks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which led to a huge growth because the All Blacks is a massive brand. People went, oh, we'll go and see the rugby as a, you know, one-off event. And it started to just grow from there, started to spiral from there.
What is just another game for, let's say, either Owen Farrell or Steve Borthwick or any paying England fan? What is another game? It's like, oh yeah, we're playing Chile, you know, different from usual. That's the biggest game of Pablo Lemoyne's life. That's the biggest game of Rodrigo Fernandez's
life. Clemente Saavedra said that. This is the biggest game
of any Chilean fan's life. So if you go to Chile, they'll sell that stadium. They'll be like, oh my God, we're playing England.
Yeah.
We're playing the nation with the biggest rugby playing population in the world.
Yeah.
You know, with the most registered players, with the richest union. We are playing those guys, you know, and that's not necessarily England. That could be Ireland. That could be Wales. It should be any of these nations. It should be Australia, Argentina, whoever should be going and playing Chile in their backyard, because their fans will lap that up. It will grow the game over there. And that, as we've seen with Portugal and many, many others, Uruguay in particular, that is what will spring the results for them. And that's what will end 71-0 drubbings in the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah. So, right. Chile last played Portugal in 2019. Portugal won with a late try. Very close, very tight game. That was played in Chile in front of a crowd of about 2,000.
Okay.
Right? Since then, we saw that Maori All Blacks game, which got a crowd of, I think it sold out, I think it was around 24,000 seater. You then saw the Scotland game, got a similar 20-odd thousand, and the USA game in qualifying was played in the worst conditions ever, on the horrible time of night, everything. And yet that game managed to attract a similar record crowd. It was, you know, it was 20-odd thousand, right? That is changing it entirely.
Yeah.
You've suddenly got this as a Chile is not like Uruguay in that it's got a huge population.
Mm.
And it's also got quite a strong, wealthy population that Chilean rugby has tapped into quite well.
And good on them.
Yeah, good on them. Good on them for looking at that. But it's allowed them where Uruguay has a naturally limited fan base, and rugby has grown from being the sixth sport to the second sport in Uruguay over the course of 8 years, which is enormous. But also, Uruguay has a similar population to Wales. Like, it's a small nation, and ultimately you're going to be a long way behind football, and it's a realistic target to get there to be the second biggest sport in Uruguay. They've now achieved that. Chile, if you can grow to be the second biggest sport in Chile, which is again achievable, especially with the growth in Argentina, with the growth in Uruguay, and with potentially the growth in Paraguay and Brazil.
That's it. Those guys are going to follow suit if this happens in Chile, if this booms.
So you've potentially got the chance to really explode and grow there. World Rugby should be looking at South America as their number two priority after women's rugby.
Yes.
Like, in terms of growing the game, in terms of throwing everything at them, they should be, frankly, not forgetting about
Gus
USA.
Pichot's knocking at the door.
Oh, hello, Gus.
Hello.
Hello. Lovely, lovely trainers we suit.
Lovely, lovely. He's just whispering in my ear about how much he loves the Paraguayan team and how they're one day going to win the World Cup. Thanks, Gus. Thank you,
Gus. Thanks, Gus. We'll see you. Can you pass a message on to Bill Beaumont for me?
Yes, he says, just tell him that we love the great values of our great game.
Yes, we love the values of our great game, and William Webb Ellis was a legend. Thank you, Gus. See you.
Cheers.
There was talk as well in another Ignacio Chan piece, to mention him again, of Gus Picho running for President of World Rugby again next year, which would be great. And I think, honestly, we need to get entirely behind him.
Yeah.
Because we've seen what the Conservative approach with Beaumont, and I was more, I think, unsure about which direction it would go and which one would be better for World Rugby at the time. And actually having seen 4 years of Beaumont, or 8 years of Beaumont now...
The thing about Bill Beaumont is...
Rugby is in a much worse state than it was before. And part of that is COVID. But... a big part of that is Beaumont's inherent conservatism.
And look, the thing about Bill Beaumont is he is so old.
He is.
I don't know how somebody is that old.
He's been alive for all three of Fiji's wins over Australia.
He was...
right? The last two are in the 50s.
He's older than rugby itself. He's older than sport. He's older than this planet. I don't get how he's physically that old.
He looks at William Webb Ellis and goes, I remember when that young chap first started at rugby school.
Yes, he was a very good young chap who was coming through who had lots of potential.
Very promising cricketer, as everyone always says about him.
Yes, exactly. Right, let's quickly just say, who played well for England other than Henry Arundel?
Marcus Smith had an absolutely shite first half hour, then grew into the game.
He was class in the second half.
Like, second half he was fantastic. First half he was a
Theo
bit of a
mess. Theo Dan was really funny. Good.
Theo Dan, I think, is a standout.
Took his opportunity brilliantly.
That is the biggest positive for England, I think, is Theo Dan really impressing and really standing up, because they kind of need another hook to come through.
Yeah, Bevan Rod very solid as well in the front row.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Bevan Rod. But yeah, I think Theo Dan really establishing himself as a test player. And obviously, you know, the stand, whatever. But that was a performance in which you can go, well, yeah, we'll give you another game next week against Samoa.
Yeah.
And we'll see how you go. They've got an alternate option to Jamie George coming through.
And
he's very
that.
Similar to a young Jamie George.
Because Jamie George is obviously class, but that guy works so hard, Jamie George. Sometimes he needs a rest. He needs to not play a full 80 minutes every week. So I think they've unearthed a gem in Theo Dan. Yeah. I think he's absolutely class. Who else? Obviously, Owen Farrell's all right. Danny Kerr's all right. We both had Ollie Lawrence in our fancy team. He didn't do very much.
Well, yeah. Speaking of fancy teams, I put Meliano Buffelli in mine.
Yes.
And tell you what, for a pick that really worked out, that didn't really work out.
Yeah.
Which I think says everything about that game.
Let's
talk about that game. Emiliano Buffelli scored the only try of the game, scored all of Argentina's points in a win over a very good Samoa team.
Yeah. Got man of the match.
Got man of the match, scored me 33 points on the fancy league.
That's absolutely dreadful. I'm just going to see who I've got that scored more than that.
Yeah.
Who did less than that in my team, because I bet you, because I picked, Thomas Gajo scored more than that. How many did he score, you say?
29. It's gone down in the day since the game.
Bevan Rod got me 34.
Yeah, so
Theo Dan got me 71. Ollie Lawrence got me 38.
He scored the try, was man of the match, he's one of my lowest scorers this weekend.
That's unbelievable. That's rigged. World Rugby, sort it out. Gus Picho wouldn't stand
Gus
for
Picho
this.
Wouldn't stand for this. Gus Picho would change this entirely.
Anyway, so we went to that game, Saint Etienne, first and foremost, lovely area of the
loved
world.
Loved it, yeah.
Lovely stadium. The fan zone was top-notch. We had a great game of touch on there. A
couple of games
with my broken-ish ankle.
Yes.
It was good fun.
It was great fun.
Nice game.
Great fun. We initially just joined in with a group of Argentine fans playing against some English fans dressed as Fijians.
The Argentine fans, like, they were all like young kids. I reckon it was like an under-13s team that were on tour or something. And they were class. They were so good. They ripped up.
There was one kid in particular, like, oh, you're going to play for the Pumas.
Yeah,
you're
hell of a left boot on him.
Yeah. Then that game broke up. People went. They took the ball. And then we had a couple of people recognised just from the channel, which was lovely. Came over and joined in. We started another game, played for a bit. Someone had to get a ball out of his car. The team that are touring from the Netherlands, fantastic guys.
Oh, they were good lads.
Yeah, great stuff. Really enjoyed getting to meet them, getting to chat to them.
That was good fun for Saint Etienne fans.
Yeah, made this point there. It's a video I really want to do next year, is look at the Netherlands, because they've got a really good young team that's coming through very, very quickly.
And we recently, when we went to the Proto Dug game, saw their fullback Peter Leiden playing. And whoa, what a fullback he is.
Solid player. Yeah, I put for a great 50-22 on my first touch in that second game as well, which is something I think more people should be doing in games of touch. I was very proud of that. It was the highlight of my genuine rugby playing ability ever. And something we saw in... so the Argentina Samoa game, I think people that were watching it on TV generally said this was pretty shit. I really enjoyed that game. I had a great time.
I think... I agree with anybody who objectively will tell me that's quite a shit game.
Yeah.
But that did not stop me enjoying it for several reasons. One being, I just think both defences were class.
Yeah.
I think both defences were on top the whole time. Tana Umanga is putting in some work with Samoa. Like, obviously they've got a tremendously physical backline as well as like a massive forward pack. But I just think that like the connection in D is really, really good. Like, when Argentina made line breaks every single time, they managed to get back and then force themselves to get back on top. Mm. And obviously they gave away a few penalties, which I guess is what lost them the game, was the discipline in the end. But I don't think it was like so unbelievably bad.
I also think it's a risk that Samoa are running, and I kind of rate it compared to what they were doing 4 years ago, where they were very passive. They made occasional big hits.
Yes.
Right? And we saw them, Samoa were the least disciplined side at the last World Cup. They were kind of horrendously ill-disciplined. They were really desperately disappointing, largely because they were constantly giving away penalties and cards, and it was all a bit of a nightmare for them.
Yeah.
What we saw this year and are seeing from this Samoan side in both of the games so far, and particularly that warm-up game against Ireland, is a Samoa team who are really aggressive on every single tackle.
Yeah.
And it's completely changed the way they feel and the way they play. As you say, a large part of that is Saleh Mapisua, but a huge part of that is Tana Umanga on defence.
Yeah.
We were in front of him as he was warming them up, and I had a bit of going like, holy shit, that's bloody Tana Umanga.
Yeah, because it was pissing it down in the rain. He had his hood up and just thought, oh yeah, there's a Samoan defence coach. Kind of forgot who it was. Then you spot the dreadlocks coming out. That's Tana Umanga over there. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, I thought it was big.
Yeah. But he's doing such a good job of just drilling them to be aggressive on every single hit.
Yeah.
Which we saw, and a couple of times that backfired on them. But I think broadly, the sheer aggression and passion they're playing with is working to their benefit.
Yeah.
And yes, ultimately, this was a loss, and perhaps it wasn't the highest scoring game in the world, and they came away with 0 points from it. It still was a pretty solid performance from Samoa.
Yeah.
And a suggestion that they can go on and cause some trouble for Japan and England. This was a really difficult game, and also they're kind of, not their warm-up game, but I felt whichever of those three big games they played first was probably the one they were least likely to win.
Yeah.
And Argentina were probably quite lucky that it was them.
Yeah. I think the conditions of the game and so on eventually favoured Argentina. I think that, you know, their pack were really good. Obviously the scrum was one area where they managed to eke out a few penalties, and that really helped them out. I want to also say, like, Mo Schwalger in front of us no doubt has had a big impact on that defence. But in terms of our experience in the crowd, there's two things I want to touch upon.
Yes.
Firstly, Argentine fans are the best.
Genuinely the best. The best. I've said this before. I said this around 2019. But the two best sets of travelling fans are the French and the Argentines, right?
Yes.
So you mesh them together into a stadium with the South Sea Island crowds, who are amazing, but obviously smaller in numbers than, you know, a country with a population
and
of Argentina.
And we'll get on to the Samoans.
Yeah. Like, it was, I think, the second best atmosphere of the World Cup so far for me.
Yeah.
I think, Wales Fiji was fantastic, but that opening game and then this, and perhaps this wasn't the game to go with it, a lot of people might say. I had a great time. A large part of the down to just how good the atmosphere was.
The Argentine fans are incredible. The Argentine anthem is so, so good. Obviously, them sing along with the instrumental at the start. It's always like a goosebumps thing when you see it on television. But having just being surrounded by a sea of Argentines with their tops off, swinging them around, jumping up and down to their national anthem, it's just like, you know, people think that you need Oasis to reform to get that. But no, you just need to go to Argentina or an Argentine rugby match. It's incredible. The Argentine fans were incredible. Every single thing Argentina did well, they were so passionate and warm about, which was brilliant. But on the other side of that, so when we first arrived at the ground, right in front of us, warming up, was Charlie Falmoina doing a stretch and so on. And a lot of people kind of around us who might not have realised that was Charlie Falmoina, ex-All Black, looked at him and thought, Jesus Christ, he's massive.
Yeah.
He's bloody huge.
He's big. Charlie, he's a big Falmoina boy.
And there was somebody who I think was a relative of Charlie Falmoina, was stood on the front row with a sign which had Charlie Falmoina's name on it. And he kind of pointed at him, and Charlie was like, oh, hey man, good to see you. And had a little back and forth as Falmoina was doing his stretches. And this guy had his Samoan shirt on, had like that that kind of necklace, that kind of flowery necklace around him, and was so up for this. And in
a flag.
Yeah, and a flag. And the sign, and like when Samoa were doing their warm up, the whole time he was just bigging them up, and he was just like absolutely gassing them up, and just saying like, "Oh, you guys are amazing. Go on, Samoa. You warp, stretch that bloody ankle, stretch that hamstring."
The other thing is, right? You said Falmoina is massive. This guy was huge.
Oh, he was a unit.
Like
he's believably related to Charlie Falmoina.
Yeah, you get the impression he's probably played to a reasonable level.
Yes,
or is certainly a big, big boy.
Yes. And so I've talked about the Argentine anthem.
Yeah.
Samoa's anthem, always lovely.
Always great.
It's a really good anthem. But obviously the thing that kind of always overshadows it is their Civitale.
Yes. which is the best of the Pacific War Dancers. My hot take, I'll stand by
and
die by.
Yeah. It's not a hot take at all. I completely agree with you. It's, yeah, I love all of them, but this is so, so good. But the thing that always sends my kind of spine tingling, and I always associate it with the aforementioned 100 Shraga, is the bit where the whoever's leading the Civitale does the speech and then does his Lemanu, and in this case that is Michael Alalatoa is currently leading it, with no doubt with some coaching from Homo Shraga, because he's so good at it.
The thing I really like is that Alalatoa has got his own style and his own take on it.
Yes.
And I think we've seen a few people since Mo Shraga have come in and tried to do a Mo Shraga impression, because Mo Shraga, no one has ever led a Pacific War Dancing Rugby better.
He's the GOAT.
Better than Mo Shraga did. Yeah. Like, go back and watch him lead it in the 2011 World Cup in the game against Australia. They played
the one against Australia. That's on YouTube. It's incredible.
They're amazing. He's just like, no one's ever done it better. He does the Lemanu as like properly blood curdling. It's incredible.
He's got stage presence, man.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Michael Alalatoa, I think, is the best since to come along to do it.
Oh, he's great.
But he's got his own style. The way he really elongates the kind of leading, the kind of the speaking and the kind
of
threats.
I like the way he stands tall.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like Schwalga was more like on the level of everybody else. Yeah. Alalatoa is like an imposing figure.
But where everything for Schwalga was a lead-in to the Lemanu, for Alalatoa, everything beforehand is the important bit, and Lemanu is him like a full stop on it.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of going like, no, that is what I said, that's what I meant, and now we're going to kill you.
And you say that Alalatoa is the best at the Civitale since Schwalga. However, this lad in the crowd was unreal. Here's Lemanu, and he shouts it back, and he does the whole Civitale in time with the summons.
Word perfect,
and is so loud that the whole crowd are looking like, holy shit, this guy's nails. Like, this
nailing
guy's incredible.
Every movement, every beat of it, and completely committed.
Yeah.
There was no sense of, like, irony, or I'm doing this for a laugh,
self-awareness.
He was just like, no, this means the bloody world to me. There was a real like depth of emotion to it, and he was so passionate about this. Like, it meant so much to him, and he was stood on the front where everyone could see him in this stand and doing it, shouting with everything he had, giving it all in order to try and cheer on and celebrate his own culture.
I wish that I or somebody else filmed this, because
I know
I want to watch it back, because he was amazing. And sometimes in those scenarios, everybody just wants to watch it and like not have somebody in the crowd ruin it for them. But this guy didn't. He was incredible. He was just as good as the players.
Magic.
And we were just eulogising over it on the way out the stadium, just how good this guy was and how passionate and into the Samoa team he was. And just like, clearly, this is his dream to go and follow Samoa around the world. And good on you, son. I hope you had a great game.
Yeah. Oh, he was phenomenal. I said this at the time, right? So in the 2015 World Cup, we saw Ireland v Canada.
Yeah.
And there was a Canadian fan sat a few rows behind us who stood up for the anthem and sung it with such gusto and loudness and verve.
And enjoyment.
Amazing. Yeah. And he realised partway through no one else around him was singing. And you had all these Irish fans like pat him on the back, started to buy him beers, gave him a massive round of applause at the end.
Yeah, because he only just got louder when he became self-aware.
He was amazing. I think this guy pips him to be the best individual fan I've seen at a Rugby World Cup.
Agreed. What a guy. I hope he enjoyed the game, and I hope he enjoys the rest of the World Cup. I would buy him a beer.
I'd buy him as many as you. I don't think one would have much of an impact on him.
No, I don't think it would.
I'd buy him 12.
I'd buy him enough beers that he would do it again, Civitale.
So, to talk about the game a bit.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. But I do think if there's one word that really dominates this match, it's brain fart.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, a lot of sloppy errors from both teams, even before the rain was like lashing down.
Yeah, and it's less simple errors and more just really stupid decisions all the time.
Yeah, like Duncan Payá-Aouar's early yellow card kind of like set the tone for the whole rest of the game. Because you look at that and go, oh, that's stupid.
I haven't watched the game back, but there was one moment from right in front of us, we sat behind the post, where Argentina started to run it from behind their own goal line. And I think you can probably see, because I'm wearing a Romania shirt, which is obviously bright yellow, you can probably see my face as I go, oh God, they're running it. And I turn to you and they're going to run this. And Carreras runs it from his own post and almost, I think they do end up with a scrum five. They certainly end up making a botch of it. Did.
And then Jonathan Tamatane just decided, you know what? I'm going to rugby value the shit out of this. I'm going to go down the blind side where I'm completely marked. I've got bloody Marcos Kramer and Pablo Matera ready to nail me. So I just drop the ball.
Yeah.
You know, just stuff like that dominated the game. And I don't mind it because it was for a game so dominated by defence, like there were moments where it was quite open.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. Like, I think it had its moments, but yeah, it was so dominated by just silliness.
I think a lot of people have been very critical of this Argentine team off the back of this game.
Yeah.
I think what we actually saw is just how serious a team the Samoa side is.
Yeah.
This is a really, really good Samoa team who effectively shut down a tier one nation. And I think there's a world in which England rest a few players for the next game and Samoa give them a much better game than he was expecting.
Yes.
And look, I would be saying like losing bonus point is realistic for Samoa. I don't think it's impossible they beat England.
It's not impossible.
No, and I think they'll only get better from here on out.
A word for Christian Leliafano, I think, had an excellent game.
I do not agree with that.
Really?
Yeah, no.
I think off the kicking tee, he obviously needs 2 points when kicking for goal is one of the things that he's really good at. I think he had a very, very, very good game, but I do simultaneously think they could have done with Lima Sopoanga on the bench.
Yes, I think Sopoanga is by some distance the best 10. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the best they've played this year was that game where Sopoanga started at 10 against Ireland.
I would quite like to see what they can do with... The thing is, because Leilifano can't really play 12 anymore. He's probably not really got the gas for it, or necessarily physicality for it. Like, but I would like to see that axis work.
Yeah.
Maybe if it's a case of start Leilifano, move him to the centres early in the second half, then bring him off.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Because I do think that if you had those two on the pitch at the same time, I feel like the game management would go up another gear.
Mm.
I know Sopoanga can play fullback, but I think it'd be really wasted there in this Samoa team.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely convinced Duncan Payá-Aouar playing fullback is their best.
It's weird,
move.
Isn't it? It's weird. It's weird. I think there's a couple of issues in the Samoa team, right? Where they've got a few positions where they've got enormous depth and they've got three or four players who are all stacked and all wanting the shirt and all incredibly good. And then you've got a few positions. Fullback is one where they're just slotting in good players at somewhere that doesn't suit them.
Payá-Aouar is like a slightly less good Suteni, is the thing.
Yeah. Payá-Aouar is a great player, but he's not a fullback.
No.
And you've got plenty of those players, Suteni's another one, who they could play at fullback if they really had to.
Yeah.
But
again,
they've
been wasted there.
Yeah, they don't have just a good fullback. I wonder if Leilifano or Sopoanga might have to be the answer. I don't know. Jonathan Tamatelli is at scrum half, I think is another one, where you're kind of like, he's in the team by default, and I get why he's in the team. I don't think he's terrible. I thought he was pretty good against Chile, but
he just has
a few... He gets sucked in very easily, and he ignores the game plan very easily.
The whole physical aspect of it,
yeah.
And it's not a bad thing when you scrum half. It's better than being a wet lettuce, for sure. But occasionally, he does get sucked in by that kind of thing. And again, I don't think they've got necessarily a better option.
Yeah, I would love to see a wet lettuce play scrum half.
Yeah,
or Liz Truss play scrum half. Either one. See which one lasts longer.
Sure, sure. But yeah, I don't think Tamatane had his best game. I don't think he had his best game against Chile either.
Mm.
I think he was the one player that they slightly got to Chile. But I don't know. Like, they can't really produce much of that. Is Matavao's their second scrum half, isn't he?
Yeah.
Who has been all right. I don't really know too much about him. So, yeah. But also, I just want to also touch upon another game. There was a point with about 10 minutes to go where you said to me, this is absolutely going to be Samoa score a try with a few minutes to go to get in bonus point range. Could be the winning try. Could get one more afterwards and then nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
More or less.
It's going to be a grandstand finish when nothing happens.
Yeah.
And I was 90% there because there was a penalty for Argentina to seal it afterwards.
But that was it. Because once you said that, I was like, oh, you're right. But they're going to give away a penalty for sealing off on their own 22 and Buffelli's going to kick it through.
And you were close. It was Sanchez.
Close. Yeah.
It's otherwise spot on.
It was Sanchez and it was offside, but still, I was close.
It's just like that game has been scripted. That game, look, we've done this podcast on so many old World Cups. That this game has been played so many times before.
Look, we know exactly where that's going to be when we cover this in like 15 years' time.
Yep. Solid game. Decent
Solid game.
I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I do have one thing to say about Argentina.
Go
right?
on.
Which is, I think if they are going to get past the quarterfinals or even to the quarterfinals, depending on how that Japan game goes, because that is so hard to call.
Yeah.
I have no idea where that one's going.
Both teams could screw it up. Both teams could suddenly be class.
If they're going to get beyond or even to the quarterfinals, they're going to need Sanchez to go back into 10.
I think they are. I think these days...
will probably revert back to break glass and deploy Sanchez. And I think they're very much trying to move on from him because obviously he is like
he's well
35
old.
Now. Yeah. And he's been going around a long time.
He could feasibly be Bill Beaumont's grandson, you know?
Yes.
Like, that's how old he is. But I don't think he is at the moment a better player than Santiago Carreras. I don't think that's even necessarily a conversation.
No.
But I think he's more what they need to win knockout rugby, which isn't what they're now into. They're into knockout rugby now.
This is the thing, right? Carreras is a better player. Carreras has played very well in the 10 jersey. Sanchez is actually a 10.
Yeah.
And we saw in that England game, they got sucked into a game of just trying to run everything because they had a winger at 10.
Yeah.
They didn't have a 10 who had the discipline and game understanding of
He's
just
getting away
the
with it, Carreras.
And I felt the same thing happened this week.
Yeah.
And it worked in the games they played very well last year. This time around, this competition, a lot of teams have gone, well, the way to get to Argentina is you suck them in and you make them want to run because they want to run. You know, like Carreras wants to run everything.
They've got Mateo Carreras on the left wing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, obviously he's going to run absolutely everything that comes his way.
And Nico Sanchez is just a smarter player than that.
Yeah.
And perhaps he isn't the player he was 5 years ago, 8 years ago, even 3 years ago when he, you know, had the phenomenal game against the All Blacks. But he is still a player with the game understanding and experience to not fall into those traps.
Yeah.
And I think we saw that a bit when he came on for those last 10 minutes. And suddenly Argentina were smarter in how they played the game. They were less full of brain farts. And that could really benefit them. The other key thing for Argentina was just the benefit of having a genuinely world-class player. Like, Buffelli was near top of his game. And suddenly when you've got
excellent.
A player as good as Emiliano Buffelli playing as well as he did, you're going to win that game.
Of course.
You know, he was responsible for, well, 16 of the 19... points for Argentina, scored the try, kicked his points, just brilliant.
King
deserved
Boff
man of the match.
King.
Couple of huge defensive reads as well.
Yeah.
Great in the air. Just everything you could possibly want from him.
Huge hit on Leliafano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was just superb. He was superb. Yeah. And that is the kind of difference between these two teams, right? They're two very level teams, ultimately, but one of them has a couple of players who are genuinely world class.
Yeah. Let's talk about Georgia Portugal.
Let's do it. Oh boy, we made it. We made it to treat
time. For her. We got so into Portugal as a team playing in that game. And it was a fascinating game because you look at the first 20 odd minutes. Mm. Georgia absolutely dominated them. Georgia gave Wales a masterclass of how you beat this Portugal team by really kicking the ball. And basically just kicking it until eventually space opened up for Nini Ashvili. Like, genuine space for him to put Tabet Sadzer in for that try really early on. Like, that was a masterclass on how you kick Portugal off the park. Really targeted the set piece because in the first half, the Portugal line-out was very shoddy. They definitely shored it up by the second half. Mm. Like, they really problem-solved in that regard. But the first 20 minutes by Georgia, I think, was an absolute masterclass.
Yeah. Oh, they were sublime. And there was a bunch of people being very, you know, sniffy about how much better they are than Wales and how they're going to beat Wales in the next game. I think we saw in the second half quite a bit interesting about this Georgia side.
Yes.
But, yeah, the key thing is how good they were and how accurate they were. The problem, however, is that they weren't scoring their points. They weren't taking their points. They were tactically spot on. And then they were getting into the 22 and they weren't doing anything. A lot of it was their insistence to go for the corner because I think they knew they needed a bonus point to get out of this group because the Australia game made things tricky with them giving away 5 points there and getting nothing out of it and being, you know, negative on points difference. They probably saw this is the lowest ranked team we're going to play. We need to get maximum points out of this game.
Yeah.
And instead of just settling and winning the game first, which is the same mistake Wales made, you know, I think both sides have ended up ultimately underestimating Portugal. Georgia did and they didn't. I think they're also very used, because they've been playing this team for years, they're used to winning these games. And Portugal have got closer and closer in the last year to what they drew last year, which was huge in Portugal getting into the places, you know, it allowed them to get into the place to qualify for the repechage, and from there they go on and qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, I think, I wouldn't say Georgia underestimated Portugal. I think they very much proved us right that Wales underestimated Portugal and were arrogant.
I don't think they underestimated Portugal, but I think they overestimated themselves.
Yes, definitely, because they left so much out there.
Yeah.
You know? They
Georgia
played it tactically
should have been
spot on.
Three tries up.
Yes.
At half time.
Yes. They played it tactically spot on, and there was always, you know, just one or two incorrect decisions in that 22 area. And they don't scan to me as a team who have that kind of killer instinct to... Mm. I don't know. It's one of those things that, like,
being able to finish tries is a bit of a habit, you know?
Yeah.
And winning games itself is a habit. And I feel like this Georgia team have all of the correct ingredients apart from that one.
And this is the thing. Other than that Italy game, where everything came together and was phenomenal last year, and it was one of those destiny days where nothing can stop them. The Wales game, they were reliant on another team brain farting their way to them.
They tried their best to lose that, is the thing about the Wales game. Like, Georgia was so far from... They didn't play that well against Wales. They played brilliantly against Italy, given that. But, like, against Wales, they didn't play that well.
You want to talk about that as a heroic, all-time great Georgian performance, and it wasn't.
It was a 3 out of 10 playing a 4 out of 10.
Yeah, Georgia were good enough to win it, and they were sensible, and it shows what a decent team they are. You know, what a good team they are, that they can win those games now.
Yeah.
Where there's plenty of teams that wouldn't have won that from that situation. That, you know, being thrown that many mistakes by Wales and that little composure by Wales. However, Georgia were not at their best on that day. And I think that was the real sign. You know, they always say the real sign of a good side is playing badly and winning.
Yeah.
And Georgia doing that against a side they'd never beaten before is a real sign of
massively,
how good they are.
Massively.
But they then play well here and end up drawing because they totally put their foot off the gas the moment Rafael Sorti gets that first try.
Yes. On Georgia for a moment. Mm. The return of Tedo Adzenzadze at 10.
Yes.
What are your thoughts? He played 45 minutes and got hooked off. What do you reckon? How do you think he played?
I thought he played generally very well.
Agreed.
I thought he kicked very well. I thought he was much more sensible in how he attacked the game. I thought Matt Carver was very good last week.
Yeah.
But he's far more of an attacking-minded player. And Adzenzadze is more of an all-rounder, even though he's tiny. But he was able to kind of round the game out and add an awful lot.
I thought Adzenzadze was really good.
Mm.
I think, granted, you know, fitness of him returning from an injury recently is a part of it. But I do think they pulled that trigger on Matt Carver a bit too early. I think they kind of assumed, like, oh, right, so Portugal are playing this attacking game. If we score a try out of nowhere, because they have players who can do that. They have Tabut Sadza, they have Nini Ashvili, and so on. They have players who can do that. I think they kind of assumed that was going to happen.
Mm.
Again, it goes back to what you're saying. Like, they overestimated themselves a little bit rather than underestimating Portugal.
So Adzenzadze comes off on 52 minutes, right?
Yeah.
The same minute, Samuel Marquez kicks a penalty to put them to 11-13. And then straight after, Rafael Storti scores a second try.
Okay.
It's not a coincidence that those things swing around the moment you change your 10.
Yeah.
We saw it with Wales a couple of times. We talked about it on a previous episode of this.
Yeah, the Fiji game, Costello coming on.
And I think part of it is the issue of a young 10 coming on and needing to establish himself. But there's also something in, you're throwing them into an environment where they are on the back foot and they do not have a chance to put their stamp on the game.
Like, you're telling them, oh yeah, come on, change this game that you've had no impact in whatsoever.
Yeah.
You've had no influence on how it is so far.
And the other team has now done that.
Yeah.
You know? So Romelu Porteiro got the official man of the match.
Yeah.
The Portuguese fly half.
Deserved.
He was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
He was just sublime the whole game through. Kicked really well as well. But in attack, the way he managed shapes, the way he ran, the way he managed to get a couple of offloads in, just brilliant. But he grew into that game, right? He was pretty quiet for the first half an hour. And then after that, he just got better and better and better.
That was
once he got the measure of the game and measure of what was going on. And I think sometimes, a case like Matt Carver or like Costello, as we mentioned earlier, you're throwing a 10 into a very difficult situation. Unless you're a really experienced guy, you're a Andre Pollard, you're a Dan Bigger, you're a Johnny Sexton, you're able, but it's very difficult to have an impact on that game because you just haven't been in it and you haven't felt it and you haven't felt what's going on here.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing about Porteiro was the fact he didn't get carried away, you know, that for the first half an hour, we were saying to each other, like, Portugal haven't had a single attacking set yet.
Mm.
As soon as they have one, they'll probably be all right.
Yeah.
They don't want to get sucked into this really tight rugby that Georgia tried to play. And they don't exclusively play, like, people often kind of make that misconception. But they were doing that. They were going to the lineup. They were going to the mall constantly. And Portugal weren't enjoying that, you know? And we just knew that as soon as they got one attacking set, and it was literally their first attacking set of the game, Porteiro played it perfectly, had a few moments where he looked like he was going to kick long, but their attack looked so good that they kept the ball in hand. When Storti scored that first try, literally it was just because Porteiro threw one pass that took four or five defenders out of the game. And it was the most, like, what people who played in the 80s put on Twitter think good attacking rugby is, where just, like, forwards just catch the ball and then ship it along. But that was all it had to be, because they'd done such a good job of stretching the Georgian defence across four or five phases.
Well, because the interesting thing, talking about him growing into the game as well,
is
that comes immediately when Portugal have a penalty advantage, right? And suddenly he goes for the all or nothing ball, which is an insane ball to throw, but it's phenomenal and is image perfect from him in the end. And it leaves those forwards being in such good positions that they can just ship it on to the end to Storti. And the Georgian defence is hurrying so hard.
Storti's finish is unreal, by
yeah,
the way.
He makes the initial step and goes. You have a little shove on him from Mike Tasher, which is very funny. And then as he darts through, just a phenomenal finish. I said in the video on Portugal, he has the potential to be the first major superstar of Portuguese rugby.
Yeah.
Because he's 22. He scored 2 tries in this game.
He's some right? athlete.
You look at his stats from the last few years, he's got 15 tries and 20 caps and 12 starts for Portugal.
That's mad.
Which is ridiculous.
And you could even argue he's not even Portugal's star winger.
No.
Like, that's he's how good they are.
On the books with Stade Francais, and I reckon they play him a bit this year.
Yeah.
I reckon he gets a few games. He spent the whole of last season on loan with Bezier in the top Pro D2. But I reckon he's going to get some game time.
He's a superstar, isn't he? I loved watching him play. You make the point about Portugal on penalty advantage, by the way.
That's it. We saw it. So the penalty that they then get a few minutes later from Marques, which they kick from straight in front of the post.
Yeah.
But they get into that position. They make up 60-odd metres because, once again, Porteous starts to gamble his arm once he's got penalty advantage. And you saw his confidence grow. And once he got into the second half, or deeper into the second half, we had suddenly... He started to throw those balls when he wasn't on penalty advantage. Mm. He grew in confidence. And you felt this was a huge game of him maturing. And he has the potential, he's 22, to kick on and become a genuinely international class, brilliant fly half.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who can challenge...
He's already well on his way.
Yeah.
Like, he reads the defence so sublimely well. And that's not just the defences in front of him. Mm. That's where the defence is going to be in 3 or 4 phases time, yeah, if I do something. He can kick off both feet, which is really impressive. He's left-footed, but can do clearance kicks or attacking kicks off his right. Attacking kicks are his favourite kind of kicks,
yes,
as we've learned over the kind of past 18 months, I suppose, of him being in that 10 jersey. He's got an unreal pass on him and just knows which attack to pull out, you know, how to structure an attack, which play to run, which shape to run, and he understands the players around him, you know. Thomas Appleton was fantastic. Well, Pedro Betancourt was fantastic.
Pedro Betancourt, very, very good. Probably the player that gets the least talked about in his backline, you know, in that team with Jose Lima as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's absolutely
fantastic.
Sometimes
Marta playing at 13.
Speaking of Porteous knowing his players inside out, right, that second try where he gets on the inside of his man, rounds him, throws the offload to Storti, right? Rafael Storti and Jerome Porteous have been playing together since they were 6 years old.
Yes!
Like, they've been friends since they were 6. Storti took up rugby because he was just Jerome Porteous's friend. And he was like, come down to a rugby club, you know, come and have a chuck about. And now he's playing for Stade Francais on Stade Francais' books.
Storti's second try there, it's reminiscent of Chris Ashton at its best.
Yeah.
The way he picks that line and then just knows, I can go the whole way here. Like, and just opens up. The fact, because clearly that was one of those things, as you say, those two have been playing together since they were kids. Clearly that was something that the two of them had seen a few phases in advance.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable by Storti. What a finish.
You give Storti 5 metres and it's good as 5 points.
Yeah.
That was just Porteous knowing I can get him into a little bit of space here.
You could create a full highlights package around Storti just based on that game. Because, like, defensively he was class. Brilliant in the air.
He almost got a hat-trick try in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, and Guedas nearly got a try as well. Guedas, again, I think had an excellent game from fullback in a completely different way to how he did against Wales.
Mm.
Against Wales, it was his feet were just completely like setting the World Cup on fire. But he was really solid in the air against Nini Ashvili, who's one of the best aerial fullbacks probably in the competition.
Yeah.
And I think he was so, so solid, kicked really well. But I've got to talk about one guy in particular. He's my current obsession in this World Cup. And that is Sammy Marques
yes.
at 9. I just think he's so good. I think he's so important to how Portugal want to play. Portugal are such an attacking-minded team. They're so focused on, you know, if they get wide, throwing those risky offloads, especially like on penalty advantage, as you say, and throwing the long passes and, you know, running in the wide channels. However, Samuel Marques really complements that because a lot of people have compared him to Rowan Pienaar, and I love that. Because he is like Rowan Pienaar in the way that he goes for the corners, he kicks the goals. He's extremely smart. And the whole team, if he then goes, right, now we calm down, we've had our fun, now we get down there, the whole team just trusts him.
Yeah.
And he's the one who makes that call every time over Porteous. And so it's Pedro Lucas is their young scrum half who came on and was by all means good. Obviously Marques,
one really stupid penalty he gave away.
Yes, he did. Oh, that was so stupid.
At least the Georgian try.
Ruck.
But that's the thing, right? He's just turned 22, Pedro Lucas.
Yeah.
He's a very different player. And he's a very good player who's played very well in the Portugal jersey in the past.
Yeah. And Marks couldn't have done 80 minutes.
No. So there's talk Samuel Marks wants to... And, like, you could see he was knackered sometime before he came off.
Yeah.
But he kept playing. He's 34. There's some talk, apparently, he wants to play for a year or two after this.
Okay.
Because, obviously, it's a highlight for him to play in the World Cup. Obviously, this was the dream. He's very proudly Portuguese. He's French-Portuguese. You know, was raised as a Portuguese kid in France.
Yeah. Played a lot in the Pro Day Deux.
Played a lot in the top 14. Played for Toulouse. Played for Brive a lot in the top 14. Currently playing the Pro D. But due to fallouts with the Portuguese rugby union, alongside issues with club release and everything, he didn't get the chance. So he's, you know, he's only got 25 caps or 26 caps. It's over, you know, he's 34 now.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting on a bit, and he's only won a handful of caps. Most of them have come in the last few years. There was like an 8-year period where he didn't play
at all
Portugal. And the thing to him, this means the absolute world.
Yeah.
Like, this means more to him than it does to the young kids who are just coming through and, like, know this
he's
is a huge deal.
He's worked his arse off for this in his career, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully he can help transition the likes of Pedro Lucas into that jersey and teach him a little bit about the whole game management thing, because you need one exceptional game manager in your whole team.
You only
need one if he's really exceptional to it, and that's exactly what Marks is.
And that's it. Like, the chances of him making it to another World Cup at 38 are very slim.
Very.
It's possible that they're very slim.
Yeah.
But
Johnny Sexton can do it.
Yeah, he can give himself 2 years of just really helping blood and really mentoring Lucas, perhaps sitting on the bench for him a lot and helping bring him through. That'd be the best thing for Portugal, because they need that younger generation to kick on.
Definitely.
Because, yes, a lot of the team is phenomenal, but you look at a few of the... Nicola Martins, we haven't mentioned as well, was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, he was so good. Shirt. Brilliant at the line-out, brilliant in the breakdown, just all over the place, made countless tackles. He was so, so good. He sorted out their line-out, which was a huge issue in the first half. And clearly, at half-time, he's like, right, just chuck everything to me. And then he went to speak to the Georgian pack and said, right, just chuck everything to me. And he was brilliant.
Yeah. No, absolutely fantastic. You look at him, like, Francisco Isaac made the point on Twitter. He's still 100% on tackle success. He's 32 tackles for 32. He's also made 9 carries. 72 metres from 9 carries is a hell of a return.
Pretty damn good.
So, yeah, he's a very, very good player who I thought had a fantastic, a particularly great game. Was good against Wales. Was even better here.
Yeah.
However, yeah, there is a little bit of you that looks at this Portugal team, right, and goes, they will, sometime in the next few years, even if it isn't immediate after this World Cup, lose Francisco Fernandes, Mike Tajja, and Samuel Marks, who are key players. Their scrum really held its own against Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, even got on top a few times. Costa was very good when he came off the bench, replacement prop.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one, because this team needs to kick on, but they also need to find a few players in there to do so. But they're really young, they're really building, and they're so good to watch. I love them. I love seeing them play. I was so cheering for them. And then we come into that final stanza.
That's it. So the Pedro Lucas penalty is really frustrating because they just defended 18 phases against Georgia. And don't get me wrong, in that set, they'd lost about 20 metres.
Yeah.
But they looked okay. They looked like they knew what they were doing and that they were patient enough that eventually Georgia would make an error.
Yeah.
And eventually Lucas gets a bit impatient, comes in the side, pinches the ball from the back of the ruck when it was still in and gets pinged for it. And you look at that on telly and you go, that is really, really stupid. Obviously, in the energy of the game, you don't know what goes through Lucas's head.
Yeah, you don't know if he thinks it's genuinely out, which I'm sure he did.
I'm sure he did. But obviously, George goes to the corner from there and score from the mall in the most inevitable way possible. And yeah, the last play does bear some talking about with, I think it was Martins winning the breakdown penalty, wasn't it? On the edge, getting him to chase the kickoff, wins the jackal turnover. And Portugal have a shot to win the game on the 22, right out on the 5-metre line. From touch. We had a bit of a conversation about this.
We did,
about whether you go for goal, whether you go for the corner.
I would have gone for the corner. I think that is too difficult a shot to be putting all of your trust on one player's shoulders for such a historic moment.
Who is the second line kicker as well.
Yeah. I said this. If Samuel Marks is still in the field, you go for goal.
He nails that.
Yeah. Since he isn't, I think you go for the corner. Suso Guijarro is a very, very good kicker.
Yeah.
He's, you know, kicked plenty for Portugal in the past, but
it's a lot of pressure to put him in a World Cup in his biggest game in the rugby team's history.
Yeah, he didn't take a shot last week. This is his first shot in a Rugby World Cup. He got into rugby because he was watching the Rugby World Cup 2007 on the TV and asked his parents to take him down to a rugby club. Yeah. You know, and a few years later, he makes his debut alongside some of those players for Portugal. And it's an incredible story. It's a beautiful story. But also, it means he is now looking at this, right? And when he was a kid, he was growing up watching Portugal losing by huge margins to all of these teams. You know, yeah. They're conceding 100 against the All Blacks, conceding 50 against Italy. He's now in a position where he can. The thing that he dreamt of when he was a kid watching those games, he is the guy who can kick the shot to win them the game.
Yeah.
But win them a game in the Rugby World Cup for the first time
ever. It's
huge. Ever.
It's huge.
And it's such a difficult kick, right on the angle, right on the touchline.
Do not blame him at all for missing
that. I think you go for the corner. And you try and work a drop goal position. Portela loves it. A drop goal attempt.
What I was saying at the time was like, go for a tap and work it in field.
Yeah.
Because I just have this, I had this vision when that penalty was given, that, oh, they go for the corner, Koto Makatazu is just going to jump and steal it and they're going to kick it out.
Mm.
Like, I just felt like, that the fairy tale ended for Georgia of Portugal sorted out the line out until the very last one, the most important one.
But I think it's almost fairer to put the weight of it on the collective effort of the forward pack than it is on one kicker.
I agree.
And
I
think, I don't know, gave it a pretty good go and he came pretty close. And for a second, he thought it might be going over. But ultimately, I think the weight counts and the difficulty of the kick counts. Opta tweeted the kick prediction out and they were 45% likelihood of him getting it.
It's obviously a pointless conversation for us to have.
Yeah,
because
in
a sense, there's no correct answer because... Let's say they go to the corner, Mikitadze steals the line out, they kick it out, and or even they catch it, go a few phases, drop it, whatever. And we're all going like, they had a penalty in the 22. Why'd they not go for goal? You know? But it's a pointless thing to discuss. But the final score, it was a draw, 18-all. And it was probably what was deserved in the end.
I think it was a fair result for the game. I think it was a really tight game between two very evenly matched teams.
Yeah.
The really interesting thing is that this is quite an old Georgia team in a lot of ways, or an older Georgia team than this Portugal team. And this Portugal team has improved so much in the last year, never mind the last 4 years. 4 years ago, they were just starting to beat the middling tier two teams, you know? They're beating the likes of Chile, they're beating the likes of up there, and now they've started growing to the point at which they're competing with Georgia regularly. You know, they drew last year and they drew again this year. And they're beating Romania comfortably in the Rugby World Championship now.
Yeah.
And we also saw them having proper games against Japan and Italy. And they are building in a direction in a way Georgia feel like they've kind of plateaued a bit. And Georgia feel like they need some big change in order to kick them on.
Yeah.
Portugal are just growing and growing. And I wonder if in the next few years we'll see them win the Rugby World Championship. I think that could happen in the next 4 years. I think there's a world in which they qualify as Europe 1 next time rather than
That would be good, wouldn't it? I'm loving the amount of Get Portugal in the Six Nations chat that's going on, by the way. It's just, they're an immensely fun team.
This is this group of players' first World Cup. It's obviously Portugal's second World Cup.
Yeah.
But that was a very different group 16 years ago.
Yeah.
This is the team that will be growing towards whatever Portuguese rugby becomes. Whatever Portuguese rugby goes on to become, it becomes because of these players.
What's interesting...
Right? I think this group of players will at some point beat a Tier 1 nation.
That's it. Like, what's interesting is they qualified in the very last thing as the repechage because they drew a game with a last-minute Samuel Marks penalty against the USA in the very final repechage, right? And I expect them to qualify for 2027.
Yeah.
It's not that I just... think like, oh, I think they'll do it again. It's like, I know, I expect them to do that. I think they should expect themselves to do that.
Even if the World Cup doesn't expand to 24 teams.
Yeah.
Even if the World Cup goes down to 16 teams and Andy Goode gets his way, which is a bloody stupid idea, I still would expect Portugal to qualify.
Yeah.
I think they're extremely good and only going to keep getting better.
I think they should decrease the World Cup to be one team and it should be Portugal.
Agreed. Portugal and Chile.
Okay,
they just have a final.
Teams.
Just have a final.
Yeah, fair enough.
They just, that was what they were playing in 2019, actually. The World Cup, everyone called the World Cup, was actually
England
a
coming
second
over
go. Yeah, this Portugal team is going to be a Tier 1 nation. I don't know which one. We'll see. I hope it's like Ireland or someone really good. I hope it's South Africa.
I hope it's New Zealand.
Mate, imagine. There's a not impossible chance that's Australia in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh my God. But the thing is, I say imagine, like...
Australia Portugal lose tonight as we're recording this, right? Suddenly, they have nothing to play for. They send the kids out, and Australia look dejected.
I could see the Portugal game against Australia going very similar to how the game against Wales went.
Yeah. But you throw in Australia being 20% less motivated if they're already out, or they're good as out.
Oh, that would be good, though, wouldn't it? Oh, I'm very excited for that game.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that we have another game to watch. In fact, another two games to watch.
I also think I also had this was my gut feeling before the World Cup, is like, there's a chance of, and I didn't feel this was necessarily nailed on or anything, but there's a chance of a Uruguay 2019 situation with Fiji and Portugal.
It's
in terms
entirely
of just
possible.
Underestimating them and
putting
seconds out.
That is going to be the most fun
being,
game of yeah, the whole group stage.
One of the most, just as a pure spectacle, one of the most entertaining games in prospect.
And also, like, if Australia batter Portugal, which is a possibility, I can't deny that it's a possibility.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, it's the likely outcome, you know.
If that happens, but it's going to be a Russia in 2011 against Australia story, and yes, Portugal are getting a try bonus point.
Yeah, they're dropping a goal late on, and we'll get the Dales on to talk about it in a few years' time.
Yeah, exactly. One of the Dales we're meeting later today, yes, hopefully, all being well for us, Australia.
Looking forward to
because,
it.
Because, bloody, we've got to go and watch that in a bit, haven't we? Which is not going to be as good as any of the games other than England-Chile that we've discussed today.
So, do we have anything else to talk about on that game?
I don't think so. Just Forhat, Samuel Marks, because I love you. You're my favourite scrum half.
Hugely enjoyable game. I think Georgia-Portugal is one of the top three games of the tournament so far.
Definitely.
I think whereas Fiji and South Africa-Ireland has played almost immediately afterwards, played late that evening. Both unbelievable games. And that brings us through the bloody rugbies, doesn't it?
That really,
all the
really
bloody
does.
Rugbies. So, please join us soon. We'll have to talk about Scotland, Tonga, and bloody Wales, Australia at some point. That game's this evening as we're recording. We'll be looking at that, looking in the general direction of that at some point. Got to head to Leon Stadium now. How are you feeling?
Just, it is what it is, isn't it? Just not.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's going to be horrible. Right. Rugby.
Fourth of Samuel Marks, rugby.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.